Hello friends, and welcome once again to another episode of the Kings of Anger podcast. This one, I believe, is number 32.
Nailed it.
Have we really done 32 of these already?
Yeah, well, you haven't.
I have. Oh, right, because of course you and Stu did. But
yeah, you joined us.
It was a lot weaker back then, wasn't it, before I got involved, let's be honest.
Before Mark.
Yeah.
The
I got involved and, and raised the level. Anyway, with me as ever, my name is Mark Heath. I'm officially the second best Ipswich Town podcast host. There's been a poll, it's fact.
Who was the best?
I don't know, someone on long air, I think. some geezer. With me as ever is Andy Warren, Hutch.
Hello.
Hi. And Stuart Watson, the doctor. Right. Chaps, how are we?
All right.
Are you really second in that poll?
I was second, yeah.
Well done.
What are you saying?
I
should have been lower.
Just at the point that I looked at it, you were...
How many is there?
You were third.
There were four. No, I think you'll find I was actually second, Hutch. Thanks for pointing
Congratulations.
That out.
Congratulations.
It was a very close run thing. I lost by a good 35% or so to your mate Button.
Would you believe I've actually just received a text message
I bet
from
you have.
Him?
I bet you
as,
have.
As this is...
You probably voted for him as well, didn't you?
I did, yeah.
You sly snake.
I was sat next to you at the time, so it's fine.
Well, anyway, what's Button want?
We and Sue bumped into Ben on Tuesday at the game.
Go out for lunch, did you? Go out for dinner?
No.
Find each other drinks?
I've already said we bumped into each other at the game.
Okay,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, just said hello. They're putting on a live show, Mark.
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah, unbelievable, isn't it?
We're going on it.
Been invited.
For real?
Yeah.
This is openly...
How do you feel about this?
Openly cheating on me.
Well,
in public.
We're spreading the Kings of Anglia message to Curve Bar Ipswich, so...
What's your fee?
In discussions.
Because I see that they're charging a significant price for entry.
I think they might have to up the ticket price now we're going on.
No, you're involved.
Or
yeah.
Lower it. Or the other, yeah.
Didn't intend to tell you that on the podcast, but...
That's good. That's good. Nice. Exactly. So at least I know where I stand. That's interesting. Yeah. Very interesting.
Your invite... I'm sure your invite's on its way.
Yep.
Right. Let's. what's everyone been up to? Let's do that part of the show. The upbeat.
Right. So you may have noticed that just then Stewie got excited, banged the table, and that stopped the podcast recording, which is probably a good thing because I was sulking and still am. Anyway, Stewie, you're asking questions. You might as well host this now.
Come on. We've just had a little 5 minute. We've done you some counselling. We've said you're great.
You've
got your own nickname now on Twitter. There's a few of those. Hamstead is knocking about. Hamstead Heath, we like that one.
I'm not a fan of Hamstead.
Cliff?
Yeah. Cliff's alright. I prefer Prime Time.
You don't get, as we've discussed, you do not get to pick your own nickname. Mm. That's not how it works. So.
That is a really good nickname, though. Anyone that has that nickname is.
What's that?
It's Prime Time.
Yeah,
I like
my
Cliff
nickname.
Hamstead. I think that works well. Right, let's move on.
Okay, so Andy, when we last spoke, me and Stu were very interested in the state of your back door.
Yeah.
What's the update?
You know, we got that review that said they often talk about the tragic lives of three regional journalists. This is the bit that prompts that, isn't it?
It's not tragic. But everyone needs a door.
They do, not at the price that I paid for it. But yeah, it's fine. It's good. It's all installed. Go in and out, can open it, close it. Opens a different way to what I was expecting. The hinge is on the other side to what I thought we were getting, but apparently I signed the bit of paper.
Are you sure it's been installed correctly?
It's been installed excellently by the fine people at Anglia Windows.
Kings of Anglia podcast, Portrait Association.
I've still got the receipt.
Friend, what about Tiger? How's he taking to the cat flap situation?
Poorly, very badly. This morning he did use it for the first time. He doesn't know what he's doing, really. Has to have it held open for him, which really defeats the point of it. We'll get there.
Mm-hmm. And Stewie, how's things with you? How's the haunting?
Yeah, we discussed about how we've got concern that there may be a ghost in my 2-year-old daughter's bedroom at the moment.
This may sound flippant, but if you haven't heard it, it's genuinely unsettling, Stuart.
Yeah, she cries in the night, says there's a man in her room. It's genuinely very unsettling.
Not in her room, at the window, isn't it?
Sometimes at the window. He's now a horse man. He's an old man, we've established. It's all very, very unsettling. So, yeah, we're going to have someone come out and bless the room.
An exorcism.
Basically, yeah, exercise the
room. I compel thee.
My wife's idea. I'm not really into it, but if it gives her a peace of mind.
Can you film it, please? Because things might happen.
Well, I think it might be happening during the day when I'm in here. But
during the day? It's got to be. He's out at night, isn't he?
It's got to be at night. Yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, that's happening next week, so I'll give you an update when that's done.
I look forward to updates on that. Mm. That's good stuff.
Are you all right, Mark?
No one cares, obviously, clearly, what I'm up to. So let's...
maybe if you gave a bit of yourself to the listeners, they would connect with you.
Tell them about your food reviews.
Oh, my food reviews, yeah. I've been out and done another food review, boys. Montaz in Newmarket.
They look good, I'd like to look at
fantastic. If you like your Indian food, but you like it a little bit more upmarket than just necking 17 pints and smashing a jalfrezi. Which, let's be honest, there's also plenty of time for that.
I can't drink alcohol when I have curries. Well, you know I don't drink much anyway.
Yeah.
Don't like it
too much. Too
what
gassy.
Do you have then? Milk.
If a milk was on offer, I'd have a milk. I'd love a chocolate milk.
A chocolate
with the curry. Well, I like that with other things. Just a Coke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well. Each to their own.
I just don't really drink.
Sure,
do
Bloom
I?
Will provide you with a Coke at this.
All right, come
anyway.
On, let's move on.
Montaz Newmarket, though.
I'm the desk again. Is it still recording?
Still recording.
Sorry,
Stewie's very bangy today. let's start first of all, boys, with obviously the game Tuesday night wasn't very good. Your thoughts?
First half wasn't very good. Second half was quite good.
Shambolic. I read on Twitter. First half.
Well. I'd like to watch it back again, Stu, because Paul Hurst has watched it back again and he views it differently to how he himself viewed it on Tuesday night. And we don't quite have that luxury of being able to get hold of full championship games to watch back again, obviously.
I think we all feel differently sort of after the emotions have subsided, but there's no doubt about it. They were utterly outclassed in the first half. First of all, I think we need to say that Brentford are a very, very good football side. Looked very much the well-oiled machine that Hurst talked about. Their movement and one-touch passing in the final third was a joy to watch, really, if you're putting your Ipswich Town specs to one side. But Ipswich didn't help themselves, did they? Every time they won the ball back, they just gave it away. And that was the biggest part of their downfall, really, in that first half. But... gutsy old response, second half, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's an awful cliche, but it was a game of two halves, wasn't it? Like they all are, which is what Paul said after the game, but it was a massive turnaround in that second half. They used the ball so much better. John Nolan had a really big influence on the game, having not done that in a couple of the previous performances. He came on influencing. They used Caden Jackson a little better, I thought. Actually, they stretched the Brentford defence. We used him to stretch the defence. And I've watched the header back a few times. It was a really, really good header find that far corner. Like, do you remember Martin Waghorn scored one last season against Sheffield Wednesday, I think, from an Emir Hughes cross. Mm-hmm. Where just angling. Love goals like that.
Used the pace of the cross.
Yeah, brilliant header.
Beyond the near post, across the goalkeeper. Yeah, lovely header. That
maybe some great pitches as well. See Steve Waller's pitches, fantastic. Mm.
Very good.
So, 1-1. Still Town are unbeaten at home. Looking on the bright side. Drawtrous, Portman Road, as someone suggested to us on Twitter. I like that.
That's ours now.
That's our idea. We'll use it. And then moving onto the press yesterday. I was actually off yesterday. One of my very rare days off, boys, as you know. But I still did find myself watching the press conference. And I've not really had this conversation with you outside of this particular office. But I thought it was interesting, Stewie. When he got to you quizzing Hollywood Hurst, there was maybe a first snipe referring to you fishing, you seem to be saying.
Yeah, and I think we're probably going to come on to this in the mailbag section in a minute, but there have been rumours, and they are just that at the moment, knocking about at the moment about unhappy camp and various different things. So I just asked him about what's the mood in the camp, and we'll talk about this a bit more in a minute, but...
Let's do it now.
Okay, so it's been a funny old week, really. After the game on Saturday, a few people started contacting us privately and directly to say that there was a few unhappy people behind the scenes, that things weren't all well. Took it with a little pinch of salt at that time.
It's probably worth saying these were... like
third hand things. This isn't people directly within the football club, but this is people claiming to be getting information from within the club, people that maybe have had track records of getting stuff before. so you had to take it reasonably seriously, but pinch of salt. And then these sort of things started finding their way onto the internet, I think onto forums and social media around half time of the game, I think on Tuesday actually, and that seems to have grown. Maybe a little bit of Chinese whispers at play, but the general, it's difficult because we're giving airtime here to stuff that can't be substantiated, but there's a sense that there's a few people behind the scenes that are unhappy with Hurst, and that seems to have now, the rumours snowballed to a stage where it was Hurst is facing the imminent sack and may not be in charge for the weekend. When it got to that stage, I had to start making some direct calls on Wednesday, the morning after the game. I've spoken to quite a few people behind the scenes at Ipswich, and basically the gist of it is, yes, there are a few people whose noses have been put out of joint. There's been a lot of change. They're bottom of the table and they're winless. Would you expect it to be a completely happy camp behind the scenes? Bottom of the table and winless? I'd be worried if it was, to be quite honest. A whole set of new staff have come in. There's some other staff that were probably there already that's changed their job titles and where they are in the pecking order. So people don't like change in any walk of life, do they? You know, it's like if a new editor came in here and suddenly changed everything that we were doing. Everyone just feels a little bit uncertain. But Marcus Evans knew that this would happen, that it might be a bit of a stormy start. We did enough stories on what Paul Hurst was like as a character and how he was blunt and straight talking, and he might, you know, say it how it is and ruffle a few feathers. That was the whole point of getting him in, to try and shake Ipswich out of maybe this little comfort zone of 6 years of Mick, and everyone knew what he did and what he said. And so yes, there probably is a few people that are not happy with change behind the scenes, but is Marcus Evans going to suddenly make a change just based on that 8 weeks into the season or whatever we're in? No. Would he consider a change if relegation looked a real possibility? Yes, he would, because he's a businessman at the end of the day, and he cannot afford for Ipswich to drop into League One because of the value of the club and all the rest of it. Mm. But we're nowhere near that point at the moment, from what I gather. This is what I'm told, that, you know, give it another 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 games and they're still winless and they're still bottom and they're in danger of getting cut adrift, then he would have to consider that. But my word, he'd be eating some serious humble pie if that was to happen after everything that was said. Yeah,
that would be quite the U-turn, wouldn't it? Because if that was to happen, the assumption would be that you would then go, what, for an experienced old head? And dare I say it, there'd be one outstanding candidate on the market who we're not going to name, but we know quite well. Probably, but obviously that wouldn't happen, but he would be the exact type of person you're looking to come in to stabilise, to steady the ship, and that's a massive U-turn when you've gone down the route of a new era change that was needed and put everything behind that. So Marcus Evans has got a lot riding on this in every sense, so he'll make the right decision for him at some point, but that point clearly isn't now, surely.
No. Interesting though that Hurst Hollywood obviously got his ear to the ground, as it were, in terms of the various things that are out and about.
He's very cute, and I think he's obviously quite tuned in. He's mentioned things that he's read and seen directly himself, and obviously he's got press officers and people just sort of giving him the heads up on what the general mood is and what stuff is out there. So he comes into these press conferences pretty primed, and
which is another thing I like, because obviously
I'd be the same.
A lot of people, Mick, those sort of people say, oh, I don't read anything. But clearly they do.
Or at least make an effort to have people tell them what's been.
Yeah.
I'd be the same, I think. I wouldn't
of course
be
you would,
if
yeah.
I was in a job that was as heavily scrutinised as a football manager's, I'd be the same. I'd be reading what people are directly writing about me. We kind of do it now. We get a few comments and things that we know what people think of us, good and bad.
Yeah. This is difficult, isn't it? I wouldn't want people rating and commenting on our performances on a daily basis. And
mediocre.
Yeah.
I'd have been a 6 yesterday, if I'm honest.
6 is high.
Yeah,
you weren't here, you don't
Tuesday
know.
Tuesday wasn't my... midweeks, you're never happy with our performances midweek because of the pressures of deadlines, and we have to turn stuff around so quickly, don't we? So I always pick up the paper on a Wednesday morning and I'm never quite happy. So There we go. We move on to the next one, just as the old cliche goes.
And let's move on to the next topic. Nice link, Stewie.
Thank you.
The next topic is James Collins, who also emerged yesterday. Won't be signing for Ipswich Town. He's been training with them, but he's not. He's had it wearing his toes to another club. First, he wouldn't say who that was, which I thought was quite right. But yeah, Collins not signing. Thoughts?
Well, I said
you weren't a fan anyway, were you?
Well, I'm a fan of him as a football player. Absolutely, he's a very good football player. But if it was me, I wouldn't have been going down the route of, particularly after Matt Pennington came in and did so well. I think that the interest in Collins was obviously there before Pennington had come in and started doing well. Once that had happened, he wouldn't have been someone I'd have pursued, because you're just chucking somebody else into a mix that, you know, you've already got a massive decision to make this weekend, whether you bring Toto Nsiala back in ahead of Luke Chambers and Matt Pennington. Both of those two, I think, have done pretty well, if I'm honest. Would James Collins have complicated that? I think so, probably. And also, obviously, he's been carrying a knock, so you certainly don't want to be chucking an injured veteran into things. So, yes, he's a very good defender. I'm sure wherever he goes, it looks like Aston Villa, possibly Stoke, he'll do very well if he plays. But I think Ipswich maybe should be looking to gel with what they've got rather than adding more. That's just my opinion.
I agree. Yeah, I can't really add much more than that, to be honest. I think we've already got some slight concerns, you know, regarding John Walters now. I think we all thought he was a very shrewd signing, but the big if was whether he could stay fit. He's turned 35 this week.
Ancient.
And already got an Achilles problem that's going to be keeping him out. Yeah, they rumble on, and that's just, you know, we've heard all the stuff coming out of the island camp with Keane calling him out for not being able to train all the time. And no doubt that he's a fantastic pro, one of the best out there. But if your body starts letting you down, there's not a lot you can do about that. So let's hope that's not the case with John Walters, because we've liked what we've seen from him so far. But he's going to miss out again this weekend, by all accounts. Could have had exactly the same situation with James Collins as well, who's already had a hamstring issue just through his few days training with Ipswich. So do you really want to be carrying a couple of players in that situation on reasonable wages? Probably not. And as Andy says, got three centre-backs vying for those two slots already at the moment.
I can relate to that as an elite athlete. It's getting on a bit.
You've got plantar fasciitis, haven't you?
I've got all sorts, mate.
Peyton Manning.
My foot, I believe the technical term is knackered. I'm on the shelf for a while. I certainly would be available for Bolton. Knee problems as well.
Are you out on the grass?
No, I wasn't out on the grass.
Okay.
I was sitting with my feet up with ice on it. Anyway, let's move on to mailbag, boys, because there's a lot of them. I've been watching them tick over. Should say, again, a peek behind the curtain. We put the shout out for mailbag literally before we sit down to record, and then take the questions as live, as it were. So they're coming in on Twitter while we're sitting here, and there's a lot. So let's try and get through all of them.
Let's go.
Starting with Dylan. He says, what team would you start on Saturday and why? So included in this is the centre-back debate.
I think we're both going to say the same thing, aren't we? Start the team that finished Tuesday.
Which was?
Gherkin.
On the spot, yeah.
Gherkin, back four of Danasian, Pennington, Chambers, Knudsen, then Skews and Shalabar, and then a three. You know, we've got these fluid formations, but then maybe it's a three of Edwards, Nolan, and help me out, Stu.
Ward,
who played very well actually, and Caden Jackson. That's what I'd do. Start the team to finish, build some momentum.
So yeah. not bringing Ciala in.
No,
no,
no. Agreed. I think Chambers and Pennington have been pretty good for me. I thought they defended particularly well in the second half on Tuesday night. Even though Hull was a bit of a defensive shambles as a team, I don't think you could point the finger at those two. Could Pennington have cleared that one off the line? It was his header that sort of missed high up the pitch, which led to the second, if you're being ultra critical. But I thought on the whole he was one of their better players at Hull, and in fact I've been very impressed with his three performances so far, Pennington. I think you've got to keep your captain in there at given the situation they're in at the moment. So as much as I think Hurst would love to bring Nsiala back into it, he's got to stick with those two, and there's no doubt that you've got to go with the back four again.
Super, right. From this point in, let's try and take one each, because there's a lot of questions to get through. Tractor Gal Always says, what's happening with Freddie Sears, please? Injured or out of favour with Paul Hurst? Thank you, Kiss. And also, Robert Pettit asked the same question. Is Freddie Sears injured or just out of the picture? Robert Pettit's Avatar is very Breaking Bad, if you don't mind me saying.
Nice.
Good lad, Robert.
I saw a camper van the other day that looked very... It was just parked in the car park of a pub.
Like the meth
in
lab.
Southwold. You could cook in there.
Fancy cooking anyway, meth in Southwold. They probably don't get much of that.
Freddie Sears, I think he's just out of the picture, isn't he? I've seen him arrive at each of the last two games and he's not making the squad. It's hard to see where he fits in.
I feel sorry for Freddie.
We've talked about this a few times, haven't we? It is hard to see where he fits in. They played a front two on Tuesday night and had no striker on the bench. I think that kind of paints a picture, doesn't it?
Do you reckon he's in the kind of get to January and is paid up and moved on sort of thing? Or
I don't think they'll pay him up, but if I was him, I'd be looking to move on.
This is last year of his contract, isn't it?
He wants to play football.
Try and launch a cut price offer for him. He's out of contract in the summer, yeah. So yeah, not a lot more we can say about that. He's out of favour, and he'll be another one. You know, going back to the earlier point about. Naturally, there's going to be some people not too happy behind the scenes. If you're Freddie Sears, I'd be pretty unhappy at the current situation. If you're Bielkowski, you're not going to be particularly happy about the current situation. They're footballers, and if you're not playing, you're not going to be happy. That's natural. If you're a staff member who's been head of department for so long and someone else comes in and takes over your role, you're not going to be too happy about that. I'm just talking in generic terms at the moment, and I don't want people to read into this. This isn't me... I promise you, I am talking very generically here at the moment. I haven't been speaking to people directly, but I'm just saying, amidst the bigger picture of these rumours, which they are just rumours at the moment, and I have to keep stressing that, that I'd be concerned if there wasn't people that were unhappy, but that maybe that's what's needed to get to a better place further down the line. But the only way that's going to turn is when they start getting a couple of these wins and the monkey off the back, because... unfortunately, things like that tend to leak out of football clubs when things aren't going so well. But, you know, if it all starts working on the pitch, and I keep saying this, I'm still seeing enough signs. We've had one really dreadful performance at Hull, as a whole, and one bad first half against Brentford. But beyond that, I think there's been positives to take from the rest of it. I think Tuesday night could be a big turning point in that he's found his system. I think he's nearer to finding his better team. But they need that win. And these next two games, Bolton at home and Birmingham away, they need to win at least one of those games. Because if they don't, and this situation continues for a couple more weeks, then it becomes a real mental block. And all of this stuff that we're talking about being on a knife edge just starts to gain momentum.
There's some much tougher looking games on the horizon beyond Birmingham as well, aren't there? I know every game's difficult, but you've got Bolton and Birmingham, two teams expected to kind of be in the similar region of the table. Get beyond that and you're starting to get exposed to your Swansea's, Middlesbrough's, West Brom's a little further down the line. So two big games, and I think Stu's right, they need to get that win in one of those two.
Craig F. says, my question is, why aren't Hutch and the Doctor using your nickname more regularly? Hashtag Hampstead.
Exactly.
Cliff Hampstead.
Prime time. I've got a nickname already, Craig. It's going to be used more from now on. Thank you very much for asking. Jack Saunders, this one for you, the Doctor, Stuart Watson. On the evidence so far, does PH have an eye for a player, in your opinion?
Hard to say at the moment, isn't it? I'll reiterate what I've kind of said before. I don't think any of them look completely out of their depth at all. I think, you know, if you look at the ones who've made the biggest jumps up so far, is Jackson and Danasian from League Two. I don't think they look out of their depth in the Championship. I thought Jackson, promising signs for him on Tuesday night, that second half. He's got his first league goal now, and he alluded to that they're using him better and his pace and getting him in the games more. Danasian, I think whenever he's played at right back, he's looked pretty solid. He looked a little bit all at sea at left wing back, and I feel sorry for him really, because he's stepped up two levels. He's played centre back, he's played right back, he's sat out some games because of this weird work permit maximum loan situation, and then he plays left wing back. Okay, he played left back for Accrington a bit last season, but eventually he went to right back second half, and I think he actually got the official man of the match, or the supporters man of the match in the end. So yeah, I think I don't think he looks out of his depth either. So has he got an eye for a player? Yeah, I think I'll say yes on that one.
Excellent. Max Harrington for you, Hutch. After the second half performance on Tuesday, has Hurst stumbled across his best 11/formation? You seemed earlier to be hinting at that. The attacking four of Jackson, Edwards, Nolan and Ward looked promising.
Yeah, I liked it. I think stumbled across is maybe a bit, you know, not giving him enough credit, because that formation wasn't something that was then stumbled across. He's used it much previously. But yeah, I liked it. And I think that's why we were quite surprised that the changes were made for the start of the game. He obviously explained them afterwards. It was an attempt to stop a very good Brentford side, but you know, I think that's why there was the surprise with the way things were switched to the back three, back five for the start of the game. Now, I liked what I saw second half. That's definitely what I'd be going with.
Can I just talk about the wing-backs thing?
Oh, please.
I think we went outside and did our video before the match, and a lot of people were coming up to us saying, what's the team? And they've got, and there was general bemusement at that lineup. People were just going, you could see the cogs whirring in people's minds, how's that going to line up and all of that. And that, I think the mood at that moment in time was, this feels a little bit like he's grasping and desperately hoping that something works in this search for the first win. And I said that at the time because that's what everybody was feeling. He's tried two up front against Norwich, he's tried his 4-1-4-1, and he's, none of it's working, so let's give wing backs a go. And that's what it felt like to me at the time, and those feelings grew during the first half. But what I would say, and this is what I really like about Paul Hurst, is he explains things in great detail, and I think that really is helping fans stick with him, because it's not just, I know what I'm on about, I'm the manager. He sat there and he said, I went with wing backs because I wanted three in midfield against Brentford, because they've got one of the best midfields in the division, and it would have been suicidal not to match that up. Fair enough. And I wanted two up front, because everyone keeps saying we need to score goals. There was a big clamour for two up front, so I wanted to do that as well. Fair enough. So that gave me a couple of options, a diamond midfield or wing backs. I didn't think diamond midfield suited our personnel. They've played wing backs in the fairly recent future at the back end of last season, so we went with that. And you can't really argue with that logic. As it worked out, it didn't work in the first half. And as bold as he was to go with wing backs, it was even bolder to change it at half time and actually accept, do you know what, plan A's not working, I'm going to go to plan B. So I don't think you can argue with a lot of that. And I think that really helps when Hurst actually comes out and explains his decisions.
It's a conscious effort. I don't think that's just him being an open individual. He's clearly a guy that's an open guy, but I think that's a conscious decision that he's made as a manager to be open like that, isn't it? It's not just him talking like for the sake of it. It's a conscious decision that he's made to put fans and us in the loop with his thinking, and it's great.
A couple on the same theme which you've already addressed, but I'll read them out just because we appreciate you getting in touch. Edward Terry, is there any truth in the rumours of senior players and Paul Hurst falling out? And also, the same question from Paul, have you heard any mutterings that Evans is potentially looking for replacements, rumours of discontent? Obviously, we've already dealt with that, but just want to thank the guys for getting involved. Peter Plum says, still waiting on the Clubber Lang theory, to be honest, chaps. He wants to know what he would win in a fight between Clubber Lang and Apollo Creed, which I thought we'd done.
I think we've done this, and it's Apollo Creed.
Apollo Creed all day, every day. Yeah, for the reasons that I went into great, excited depths about on a previous podcast. So look that up, Peter. He's asked Frank Bruno, actually, as well. He's copied Frankie, Big Frank.
It'd be interesting to know what Frank thinks.
I want to get
actually.
Frank Bruno on the podcast. That'd be amazing.
Yes, he's quite high on the list of guests that I would like as well.
we need to put together a fancy list of guests. That'd be fantastic.
Dave Benson Phillips.
Yeah. Well, we probably could get him on for a fiver. So maybe we should.
And get a signed picture for a fiver.
Yeah.
Which we have done twice.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Sam Willingale. Whose turn is this? Is Dewey?
I don't know. Just throw it out then.
What's happened at Tayo Edun? The boy can play but isn't being considered for either left wing back, centre midfield, or left wing. Yet, Hurst persists with Spence, who looks bereft of confidence.
They're different. They're completely different areas of the pitch, the two of them.
The second part of the question, Spence obviously isn't in great form at the moment.
Tayo Edun. Yeah, I've liked what I've seen from him so far. But
has he played since he got sent off? Has he been?
Yeah, he came back for one game, and then he's kind of been unused.
Unused
since
sub,
then.
Which makes the which is the thing that's made the leaving Danasian out as the lone player to be left out is the, it's just what confuses me a little bit, because Eden has been an unused substitute throughout. I like what I've seen from him though. I'm not entirely sure where you'd fit him in to the team. Obviously Jordan Graham's come in since he was used as a left winger, Eden, and looks like he's gone ahead of him in that. Grant Ward played really well on Tuesday night, and he's probably ahead of him in that stakes as well now. So it's,
Eden looks a central midfielder to me, and I think he'd tell you, I think he has said that he sees that as his best position. He's another one, he's got some raw edges. I thought, you know, the Exeter game summed him up. I thought he was really, really good in the first half there. He was energetic, he gets stuck in, he's technically, the ball's glued to his foot, he plays forward passes, then he faded towards the end, and then he started giving the ball away a little bit. So we've seen good and bad from him at the moment, and maybe Hurst is just thinking he wants, now's not the time for him to be in the team. I think we'll see more of him.
As a follow-up, Sam also asks, are we likely to see any of Bishop, Hughes or Dizelle in the first team before Christmas / ever?
Right now, if I had to give you a take on this, it would be that I don't think Bishop or Hughes will start a championship game this side of Christmas. And that's just maybe a natural pessimist in me. I hope I'm wrong, because they're two players that you get the sense would fit really well into what he's trying to do. Mm-hmm. It's just so sad to keep asking questions about these two, and to hear the answers coming back. It's really, really sad, because they're really talented football players that just can't get out on the pitch for whatever reason.
Dizelle's probably the furthest ahead of those three at the moment. His progress after injury seems to be that little bit smoother. You just get rid of your chewing gum there, Andy. Good.
Swallow it.
So he played the full 90 and scored for the 23s on Monday at Watford. They won 2-0. But yeah, Hughes and Bishop just keep having setbacks, don't they? His knee keeps puffing up, and Bishop's come off with another hamstring problem on Monday. So we seem to be going round in circles with them. They keep just having little setbacks. And sad is the word, because I don't know if you saw the Michael Owen interview recently where he was kind of reflecting on his injury worries. I mean, I think, you know, in the Kieran Dyer book recently, it was really sad. It gives you a different perspective on, you know, everybody in football is very, they become figures of fun almost, people that, oh yeah, he's made of glass, he's injured all the time. And, you know, nobody, think about these guys, that's their life. Every day they get up and they can't do the thing that they love, and they can't get out there with their mates on the training pitch. And, you know, whatever people, however frustrated fans and staff are, trust me, these guys will be so much more frustrated. And I just really, really hope that we can get both of those back, because they've had such positive impacts in the past, haven't they? And I think Andy's right, they would add something a little bit different to that midfield mix.
Hughes in particular, actually, is the one that I would really like to see in the system, because we've talked about not linking midfield to forwards, and I think Emir Hughes could be a player that could really do that if they could get him out on the pitch.
Mm. The Buffet Bowler, who I love that name. He's kind of asking stuff we've already covered, but he says, do you feel Hurst's 5-3-2 selection was the first big sign of panic? Obviously, we kind of covered that. Do you think he'll make any changes from the second half? Both the boys saying he shouldn't. And then Buffet goes on to say, I think we need stability now. Pick the same team for game or three if we can.
I think, that's quite big for me. I think Paul explained it, that I think a lot of the changes, he was asked, do you want a settled team? And he's kind of said no. Because he wants everybody to feel like they've got a chance of playing every game, which I understand. But I also think that this is a new-look team, and the only way that you're going to start to develop a few little partnerships, you want your left-back and your left-winger on the same wavelength. If you want your two centre-backs starting to build up a partnership, you want all those little relationships on the pitch to start to happen, and that's not going to develop unless they get a few games in a row to play with each other. So all this sort of changing of systems and personnel, for me, it's just been a little bit too much. I can understand the logic behind keeping everyone on their toes and Obviously, the criticism in the past was that too many players were picked regardless of form. Maybe it's just gone a little bit too far the other way. I think there might be a happy medium to be found. But obviously, while you're not winning games, it's hard to keep picking the same team all the time, isn't it?
Dan Jeffries, another one, asks about the atmosphere and issues at the club, backroom staff, academy coaches. Dan, obviously you've already addressed that at the start, Dan. And the final serious question from Sam Rogers, can or should, this is for you Andy, Chalabar and Skuse play in the same team?
That's a tough one. If Emir Hughes or Teddy Bishop were available, I'd probably say no, but with what's available, are they the best two? Probably. If you're going to play John Nolan more advanced, then yeah.
There's your answer.
Yeah.
There you go, Sam.
When you play midfield three, you want to have a good mix, don't you? You want to have one creative, you want to have one sort of enforcer, you want to have one box-to-box, if possible.
The trouble is, I think that the thing is, which one of those is Cole Skuse? And I think that's the difficulty. Which one of those boxes is Cole Skuse ticking? It undoubtedly brings qualities to the team, but I don't think he's firmly really in any of those camps. And when you're playing a three, like you say, you do need certain things. I'm not sure
this
which
Cole
one
Skuse
he is.
This Cole Skuse debate is going to rumble
forever.
On. I don't think we've ever got to the answer of this. Every time you think, you know, they had a decent run of games, I remember when he was injured around the sort of a February time where they seemed to score more goals and look better in an attacking sense, and you start to, that was when it was the infamous Mick comment, don't bring that pub talk to me, because it was, you know, potentially Ipswich have more in an attacking sense without him in the side, but there's no doubt they lose something in a defensive sense when he's not in the side. Sometimes he's been out of the team and you think, actually, you only realise what you've got till it's gone, sort of thing. And he does all those little unsung, unnoticed things that I don't know. I can't give an answer to that question. We've watched Cole Skuse for however many years now. For me, at the moment, he's got to play. I think you need that spine of senior players, leaders in the team for this current situation. So he's got to be in my team at the moment.
Yeah.
Our friend Mike Bacon, who went to the game on Tuesday night, on Wednesday when you boys were both off, we were talking about the game, and he said, you know what? One of the biggest things, the difference between this season and last season, is they need Cole Skuse more now than he did last season. That was his observation.
Yeah,
so
fair comment.
There you go. Right, now onto the good questions. The Buffet Bowler's back on again. He wants to know, who would be the best ITFC player of the last 10 years in A, boxing fight, B, MMA fight, C, pub fight? Discuss.
Now I know friend.
I love the fact we're getting more fighty questions because it shows that that's what the people want.
Boxing fight. You want someone that's a bit more classy, don't you? A bit of a silky.
What are you saying? MMA is not classy.
That's not what I'm saying at all. I was comparing it to the street fight. Actually,
here's what I'm saying.
Street fight. I want Christoph Berra, please.
I'd say Christoph Berra all day, every day. I mean, he'd eat someone's throat in a street fight, I reckon. A and B, boxing MMA fight. The simple answer is none of them, because footballers are wimps. You wouldn't want anyone of those to be in a boxing MMA fight because they're too busy rolling around on the floor pretending they were hurt.
Jordan Spence did a good body slam at Fulham.
That's wrestling, mate. That's fake.
It's the same as MMA, isn't it?
Oh!
Ayo!
Bloody hell. Button and now slagging off MMA. Jesus Christ, we're going to have to throw hands at Andy Warren. And another good question from Josh wants to know, the doctor, where has your hair gone, Stuart?
Ah.
It's actually quite long at the moment.
It is looking pretty long. It's pretty lustrous.
It needs a little, where's my hair gone? My hair's gone for about 2 years. Genetics were not on my side. I was led to believe that the hair gene comes from your mother's father. And my granddad on that side had a lovely, luscious head of hair. But sadly, that didn't prove to be the case, because I've gone the same way as my old man, and it all fell out.
Stu,
my daughter arrived, it seemed to speed things up. Definitely,
when you
stress
start here, Stu, you've been here what, since 2005?
Yeah, around then.
Yeah, you had a fantastic head of hair.
Didn't you used to use straighteners?
Yeah, you had what I'd refer to as a boy band haircut.
So fresh out of university, I did have almost shoulder length hair.
Yeah,
there were straighteners involved.
Can you tweet a picture just to share with the listeners to see what you used to look like? Because it's still on some of your
there's some pictures of me in the system playing in some charity games with my locks sort of flowing in the background. Yeah, don't talk about it. It makes me sad.
But I think we should definitely tweet a picture, don't you, Hutch?
Well, just reply to the guy that asked the question.
What?
Just reply just with the picture.
That's a great idea.
If you have to.
Yes. Right, so that concludes Mailbag for today. More fighty questions, please. I enjoy those.
Less about my hair.
And the rest about football, I guess. Bolton, boys. Big game this weekend.
I've got some thoughts on this.
Hot take. Caden Jackson's going to score for the second straight game. I'm not going to say Taylor's going to beat Bolton, but I reckon
I'll ramp that up a level.
Yes, he's going to get a hat-trick.
Yes, Caden Jackson will score. Yes, Ipswich Town will win. 2-0, John Nolan with the other goal. I'm bringing positive vibes.
Good Lord. That's mental. I've got some thoughts.
Oh, here we go.
It's Saturday, 4:37 p.m. at Portland Road.
You're reading this.
Ipswich Town and Bolton are locked at 1-1 after a hugely promising 80 minutes of football, in which Caden Jackson's strike just before half-time looked to have given Paul Hurst his much-anticipated first win. However, enter Yannick Wildschut, the villain of the hour, with a Norwich loanee having slammed the ball home to silence an excitable home crowd. But who's this coming off the bench? It's Jordan Graham. Who proceeds to produce a dazzling period of wing play not seen since Ulrich Le Pen prowled the Portman Road touchlines. He beats one, beats two, delivers a teasing ball which seems to have caused little trouble, only for John Nolan to arrive later than a Greater Anglia train to London to fire home and win it for the Blues. Grown men hug in the stands. I turn to kiss Stu's shiny head, and Hurst and Doig embrace on the touchline like brothers. The drought is over. Ipswich have won. The town's nighttime economy gets a much-needed shot in the arm, with many staying out beyond 10 p.m. to celebrate. We have liftoff. A new era is here.
Wow.
There's your hot take.
Wow. That's incredible work.
Amazing.
So we've all gone for Caden Jackson to score as a hot take, and you've both then ramped it right up.
Can I just have a little look at this?
When did you write this, Andy?
I was thinking, the stream of consciousness on the walk to work this morning.
Fantastic. So what was it?
Only got one issue with this, Andy.
Okay, is the other goal.
So the score's 1-1,
yep.
And then Wildschut comes on to
score. No,
no. Oh, he scored the equaliser. Yes. Right, fine. I'm on board. Wow.
There we are.
So it's going to be 1-1, and the boy...
Can we frame, if this happens, this piece of paper that you've just...
unfolded.
Yeah, we're going to frame this.
That is fantastic.
In fact, this will just be the back page. You've written the back page.
Just stick
page.
It on there.
Let's hope this
That's
happens.
That's an exclusive.
For the picture of Hutch just pointing at the
exclusive,
at the camera.
Exclusive this, footage.
If this happens, then hot take is finished. Completed it, mate.
But in terms of the game itself, obviously we all reckon good things are going to happen. What we're saying around the game.
It's massive.
Big game. Yeah.
It is a massive game. We've talked about Bolton and then Birmingham, haven't we? It's huge. It is one game. It's not must win, but they need to
win.
It's
got to be the one, hasn't it? It's got to be the one. And then you look back at the week and get 4 points from these two games. You think that's a pretty decent return?
I just hope they go out there and start fast, like they have in so many of the games so far this season. Go out there, start fast, put your imprint on Bolton, who had a couple of decent wins early doors this season, but since have found these a bit more tough. They're... central strikers are becoming isolated from the midfield, just as Ipswich's have been. We talked about Hull being there for the taking, maybe Bolton are as well, but if they're there for the taking, you have to go and take them.
Yeah, the crowd have got a big part to play in this. I thought they were really good on Tuesday in terms of, yes, there was a few moans and groans at misplaced passes in the first half, a smattering of boos at half time, but in general, I thought they stuck with them, and they got applauded off at the end. And I think that's a sign that people are sticking with this team, and they're sticking with the manager at the moment. And I think all that goodwill in the summer is still there, which speaks volumes. 9 games into the season without a win, I think people are willing this to happen. And once it does happen, that will be some serious relief in the air. And as Andy says at the end of that fantastic monologue, lift off. It will be lift off, hopefully.
fingers crossed. Someone who we definitely know will be at the game on Saturday is a little lad called Ronnie Bird, who's being taken to his first ever Ipswich Town game by one of our listeners called Andy Nichols. Wants to know if we can do him a little shout out. So first game as a 6-year-old. I remember my first game, I think I was 9. I went to see Derby County beat Millwall 2-0 back in 1989.
Mick Harford. Was that at the baseball ground?
It was at the baseball ground. Mick Harford, 2 goals. I can still remember. It was my granddad who took me to that game, actually. I can still remember the spaghetti bolognese we had before the game, the local Italian. And we got to see a win. And that launched my love for football. So hopefully Ronnie will see the same sort of thing. The big thing, I'm sure everyone remembers, you can back me up on this, the thing I still remember from that day is walking up the steps the first time and seeing the pitch, and it felt like it was glowing luminous. Now, if anyone knows anything about the baseball ground, it was mostly covered in sand. So, but yeah, so Ronnie, obviously enjoy your first game.
Yeah, enjoy that
first view of the pitch you get today will stay with you for the rest of your life, and hopefully the game will as well. In the same way that it has done me, and I'm sure for Stu and Hutch as well.
Yeah, holding onto your dad's hand outside, weaving between all these football fans with their scarves that feel like a tiny little speck as your dad drags you through the crowd. And
it's a magical
magic
thing.
Make sure you get a programme.
Definitely get a programme.
Yeah.
And if you can, Andy, I've seen a few people do this. They've filmed their little kid on that walk up the steps to the pitch. That'd be fantastic to see.
There's that Bobby Robson quote, isn't there, about what is football? It's not the directors and this and that. It's that moment where you, as you say, see that pitch for the first time and fall hopelessly, madnessly in love with the game. And
Do you know what? I still get that feeling sometimes when I go to a football game. You probably don't because you go to so many, but when I walk up, when we went to Blackburn at the start of the season, I still got that kind of little butterflies feeling. When you walk up and you see the pitch the first time.
I do get that in answer to your question. We're very lucky at Ipswich where, so we our entrance is sort of, what's the stand, Andy? I'm rubbish. Co-op stand.
It's now the East of England co-op stand.
Co-op stand. So we go halfway up there and we work our way up the various flights of stairs. And in the mid corridor where the press room is, as you walk towards there, there's some sliding doors where the director's box is that are open, and you just see it perfectly frames this double doorway. It says Ipswich Town Football Club across the stand opposite. You just see the masts of the flag sticking up, the whole the blue seats in front of you, the green pitch there. That epitomises that view of here we go.
Everyone listening to this will be able to kind of relate to that. It's the beauty. Mm. One of the beautiful things about sport and football, particularly, is that first view of the pitch.
Whenever we go to away games, we get there any time between 1 and 2, hopefully earlier than that.
Mm.
But there's kind of the option of you either sit and do your work in the press room where there's food available, winner.
Mm.
Or you go up and sit in the sand, I quite like going up and just sitting in an empty stadium to start work. I really, that's quite a big part.
I think there's still a sort of magic about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even obviously we're there to work, but it's still I love just going and sitting up in the empty stadium, and I also love. I'm very fortunate in that I go and interview the players after games, and that generally involves hanging around on the touchline in an empty stadium when people are mowing the grass.
Mm.
And I love that as well. Just hearing the sound of those mowers and being at pitch level is great.
Good smells as well, isn't it? The burger stalls outside.
Yes, that's a good shout.
The freshly cut grass, all of that stuff.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
So, love it.
Magic.
What an uplifting way to end today's poddy. Let's hope the Blues can do it for you, Ronnie. I hope you've enjoyed listening to us today. As I say, normally on this show, if you enjoyed it, please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. We love reading them. I certainly love reading them. Prime Time likes reading them. And also subscribe on your various podcast providers so you get this nonsense into your podcast inbox every week. Boys, what are we doing other than watching football this week? What have you got ahead of you?
I have 2 weddings to attend this weekend in and around...
How are you going to do that? There's one on Sunday.
Saturday night after the game, and then one on Sunday night as well.
Bloody hell. You're popular, aren't you?
Mm.
Wedding season.
All these stags.
Yeah.
Followed by the wedding.
Exactly, yeah. The boring part.
Hutchie, what are you up to? Swimming lessons.
Swimming lessons on Sunday, not for me. I'm an expert swimmer.
You were telling me how you've been dumping baby Jessica into the pool.
I have to dump her under the water. Yeah. I didn't really like doing it. I got told off for not putting her far enough under last week.
That must be counterintuitive to all your instincts as a father, to take this precious life that you've created and dunk it underwater.
Yeah, I didn't like it, which is why I picked her out again too quickly. I got told off.
Yeah,
Saturday
keep
morning.
Longer.
Maybe not too much longer. Yeah. Saturday morning will be spent taking some old laminate flooring to the tip.
Sexy.
So that's what I'll do before I go to work on Saturday.
Boys, I'm off next week, so I'm looking forward to that. On Saturday, we are going to home make an Italian feast. We're making our own pasta with beef cheek ragu, garlic bread.
Have you got your cheeks?
We've ordered them, picking them up Saturday morning after I've been to the gym. And then we're away, and then at the back end of next week, I get to be professional TV personality, host and commentator, Contenders 24 in Norwich, proper MMA.
This is more of a big deal than it sounds, isn't it? It's not just a Norwich based skirmish.
Live on pay-per-view around
Cliff
the world.
And welcome.
But you can check that out if you like your fighting. Obviously there are some people listening to this who do like their fighting. You could do a lot worse than watch Contenders MMA from Norwich next Saturday the 29th, live on Fight TV pay-per-view. I think it's a bargain at $15, Andy. I'm sure you'll be watching.
Is Conor McGregor on the show?
He's a little bit out of the price range of Contenders.
Will the future Conor McGregor be on the
potentially,
show?
Yeah. We've got a couple of very, very talented local fighters who are appearing on there. Scott Butters in the main event. Got his toughest fight yet against a guy who's fought some big names for. Our very own Arnold Allen, actually. And has also appeared on some big shows, so keep an eye out for that. Chaps, any other business before I take my leave, depart, and obviously this time next week I assume you'll be sitting here recording with your mate Benjamin Button. Just make sure he doesn't leave his hair all over the studio again, please.
No other business.
We hope that the town get a result of the weekend. Bolton, play well please for Ronnie, as previously discussed. It's been very good
play
talking
uptown.
To you. Play uptown. Very good talking to you. And we'll speak to you again soon.